Dit is een BNR-podcast.
Dit is Dossier Europa. Ik ben Europa-verslaggever Geert-Jan Haan. En elke maand stuur ik een jonge collega op pad naar een andere uithoek van de Europese Unie. We zijn in Zweden. Dit is aflevering 3. Kan Europa het Zweedse bos nog redden?
Långa ben, eller hur?
Vi är här långa ben.
Klara, färdiga, kör! Kanon, skitbra. Kolla här nu.
We moesten even over een slootje springen. Want we lopen niet over een pad, maar we zijn gewoon recht het bos in gelopen.
Här växer en liten mossa då, som är en signalart.
Sebastian Kirpoe is bioloog. Hij heeft me meegenomen naar het nationale park Tiveden in Midden-Zweden. Precies tussen Göteborg en Stockholm. We zijn net een beekje overgesprongen. Ik zit met natte voeten. Plotseling duikt Sebastian met een vergrootglas naar de grond. Hij ziet een bijzonder mos. Een zogenoemd signaalaard. Dat alleen groeit op dood hout. Dat deze mossoort hier leeft, is een goed teken. Het wijst op een gezond ecosysteem.
My name is Sebastian Kirpoe and I'm a Swedish forest biologist. I've been working with nature conservation in the forests or the boreal forest for the last like 25 years, doing inventories of old growth forest, biodiversity of them, like mosses, lichens, fungi, polypores, birds, and other stuff, and doing like, you know, nature assessments, like nature conservation assessments of forests for these 25 years. We are in a small place, like a small national park called Tiveden National Park, which is a good way or a good place to go to actually to talk about the forest, because this is a small patch of natural old growth forest. And this is forest how, I would say, this type of forest is the type of forest that actually covered the whole of Sweden less than 100 years ago, more or less.
Het is maart en het bos verkeert nog in rust. De sneeuw is net weg, maar het vriest en de dieren laten zich amper zien of horen. We banen ons een weg tussen de bomen en over de enorme bemoste rotsen. Ik zie dennen, sparren, berkenbomen. Sommige zijn jong, andere honderden jaren oud. De bodem is niet alleen bedekt met mossen, maar ook met bosbessenstruiken. Er staat en ligt veel dood hout. Wat volgens Sebastian essentieel is voor een keur aan beestjes, schimmels en zeldzame mossen. Over een maand of twee, als de lente aanbreekt, gonst het hier van het leven. In dit bos wonen steenbokken, vossen, hazen, dassen, marters, eekhoorns en bevers. Je kan hier kraanvogels tegenkomen, een houtsnip, een gaai, een grote duiker, nachtegalen, raven, dubbele lijsters, roodstaarten en verschillende soorten spechten en uilen. Dit bos lijkt in niets op de plantagebossen waar Zweden vol mee staat. Die uitsluitend bestaan uit sparren. Allemaal van dezelfde leeftijd. En waar verder amper iets leeft of groeit. Dat roept bij mij een vraag op. Wat maakt een bos eigenlijk een bos? Als je rijen bomen aanplant. Allemaal van dezelfde soort. Met het doel die na zo'n 70 jaar te oogsten. Is dat dan net zo goed een bos als die Tiveden een bos is?
No, it's not. The biologists actually see the forest because trees are not forest. Trees is a part of a forest. There is like mosses, lichens. We have even fungi that, you know, mycorrhizal fungi, which are dependent on trees, and trees are dependent on the mycorrhizal fungi. There's a fantastic ecosystem of dependencies between or interactions between different species, you can see that by yourself. You don't have to know the species. But if you see like trees in different heights, for example, trees in different diameters, trees in different ages, also trees which are dead, both standing and lying, then you are in a natural forest, because that's how a forest is actually working. In a forest, in a natural old-growth forest, all of the trees growing in it, they will actually stand on that spot where the seed actually germinated once. And then it will live there, even if they just like becomes like 5 years old or 50 years old or 500 years old. They will live at the place that they were born. They will die at the place that they were born. And they will even decay on that spot. Every tree here is different individuals. They are not coming from a nursery where you have nursed the plants from a small genetical individual mother trees, for example. The first thing I look at when I go into a forest is that, do I see all of these like diameter varieties, the height varieties of trees, different tree species, and age variety too? And if that is occurring, well, I'm in a natural forest.
How old would you say is this forest? Of course, different trees have different ages, yeah. But how old is the forest?
That is, of course, something that I always have to debate with the foresters in the Swedish forestry industry, for example, or forest owner associations. They try to find out an average age of a forest stand. On the spot where we are right now, I would say that this forest has never been clear-cut. It has probably been logged, you know, selectively logged, let's say 150 years ago, but nothing since then, maybe. So if it hasn't been clear-cut, this forest is probably about 10,000 years as an ecosystem. But the average age of the forest stand where we're standing for the moment might be, let's say, 160, maybe, something like that. The only forest that we can really know an average age of is the planted one, because then we know which summer, which year those plants were put into the soil.
So what does it mean that a forest is maybe 10,000 years old? Does that have impact on the ecosystems that are here, for example?
Of course. I mean, we know that the largest carbon stock, for example, on the planet is the old-growth boreal forests. The older the forest is, the larger the carbon stock is, especially in the soil. So when we take away the forest or clear-cuts the forest, we also make an impact on the soil carbon. So if we just like let this forest be forest for, you know, as long as we know it, it will probably be a fantastic like climate issue for us. It will hold the carbon stored in the soil, in the trees. And then the trees and this habitat will provide us with an ecosystem which is so diverse, and therefore it will also be much more resilient towards the changes in the climate. While then we have like planted trees, where all of the trees are in the same age, the same species. There is no dead wood, there is no old trees, there is no carbon stock really, and there's no ecosystem. Those are very, very fragile to these changes in the ecosystem and also in the climate. We have planted spruce trees in monocultures. To understand these things, we should also understand that if we save more nature and protect more nature, we will probably have the best friend to mitigate the climate change. And we have a very big issue with this loss of biodiversity and ecosystems. And those are in somehow integrated to each other. Climate changes will be easier at least to mitigate or adapt to if we have an ecosystem which is working, instead of trying to say, like the Swedish forestry, for example, and the Swedish politicians also say that we have to save the climate by doing forestry, but forestry doesn't save any climate.
The forestry, the sector, and also politicians will say, yeah, but we'd better use forests than fossil products. What would you answer to that?
Yeah, my answer is, of course, we have climate changes and problems with that, and also problems with loss of biodiversity because of our overconsumption of this planet finite resources. And if we are destroying the finite planet, well, then we're fucked. There will be quite many casualties probably among innocent people, especially from the poorer countries, maybe in the tropics, for example. And the rich countries, we might be, you know, okay for the moment, but should we say no to all of these refugees that will happen, have to go away from their countries because we have, you know, destroyed the climate and their ecosystems? No, I mean, if we have to be solidaric, the politicians and the industry too has to understand that we cannot go on over-consuming this planet.
Ik vraag Sebastian hoeveel oud bos Zweden nog over heeft.
Yeah, that's one of these things that people probably like drop their jaws. Because most people that visit Sweden, they think, oh, look at this fantastic green country. It's full of forest. Well, we are full of trees. Planted ones, mostly. This type of old growth forest remaining in the Swedish forest landscape might be somewhere 10 to 15% if you include all of the nature reserves and national parks. And that is nothing. I mean, the European Union, for example, and also the international agreement with the UN is that all countries that we signed this actually agreement even in Montreal in 2022 in December, that we should protect at least 30% of the land surface in ecologically valuable or for diverse areas.
Dit soort bos, waar Zweden ooit vol mee stond, verdwijnt volgens Sebastian Kirpoe snel. Zo'n 8-9% van het oude woud is formeel beschermd. Maar van de rest is het voortbestaan niet zeker. Door een gebrek aan plantagehout dat oud genoeg is om te oogsten, wijken sommige bosbezitters uit naar bos met een hoge beschermingswaarde. Ofwel, bos met een grote biodiversiteit en met uitsterven bedreigde soorten. Kan dat zomaar? Vraag ik me af. Peter Roberts is bosadviseur bij het Wereld Natuurfonds. Je hoorde hem al eerder in deze podcast.
We have the forest law in Sweden, which is very, very liberal. It has an interesting introduction where it says environmental production should have equal weight, but that's not what has been delivered. So in that change of governance, basically what was said was that Sweden should have a divided responsibility between the state and what is called voluntary responsibility by the forest owner. But at the same time, we have other legislation coming in. These were implemented very late in our forest policy due to e-court decision called the Protect the Forest decision. It was clearly that Sweden was not complying to the expectations of the EU to have a holistic system. Actually, we have court cases after court cases, which are basically ENGOs identifying this is not being, Sweden is not following this, and so forth. So having said that, we also have the lack of resources for implementation. So the authorities right now have insufficient resources to implement, both giving advice to forest owners, to formally protect forests, but also in actually surveying legislation compliance.
Volgens die Zweedse boswet moeten productie en duurzaamheid dus even zwaar gewogen worden. Maar hoe wordt dat gereguleerd? Het antwoord dat ik steeds hoor is dat bosbezitters geacht worden zelf verantwoordelijkheid te nemen. Vrijheid onder verantwoordelijkheid wordt dat genoemd. De Zweedse bosautoriteit behandelt jaarlijks 60.000 kap-aanvragen. Maar zelden wordt er eerst gecontroleerd wat de beschermingswaarde van dat bos is en of er bedreigde soorten voorkomen. Hoe denkt bosbezitter Henrik Andersson over bosbouwbeleid?
There is a long, long tradition in Sweden of taking responsibility for your forestry. For me, it's most important is that there will be a forest after me that is in a better shape. They are healthy from a resilient point of view for climate change. but also from a different type of long lasting, that is the right tree on the right spot. And then I see a risk when you regulate too much, because it becomes administrative, it becomes with a cost. And I have heard and seen that it's a risk that you prepare in a different way, because you're afraid of the regulation, so you try to take out things that would be good for biodiversity. So I think on a voluntary basis is really something we should go for.
Henrik denkt dat het bos en zijn eigenaars beter af zijn zonder al te veel regeltjes. Voor hem werkt dat goed. Toch kan blijkbaar niet iedereen omspringen met die verantwoordelijkheid. Onderzoek na onderzoek wijst immers uit dat het slecht gesteld is met de biodiversiteit in Zweden. Dat veel soorten met uitsterven worden bedreigd en dat belangrijke ecosystemen haperen. De Zweedse regering lijkt voorlopig niet van plan het bosbeleid aan te scherpen. Integendeel, volgens politici zouden bosbezitters nog meer vrij baan moeten krijgen dan ze nu al hebben. Dan rest de vraag: kan Europa het Zweedse bos nog redden?
They have to. During the years I've been working with these things, and I've been also like traveling in Europe and see how the forest looks like in Europe. They had a crisis for biodiversity and forest already like 200, 300 years ago, when the industrialization started in Europe and the agricultural development. So there were more or less no forests in Europe in that time. And then they restarted to reforest in Europe, like say 150 years ago. And Sweden was in that time already like, you know, a vast landscape of natural old growth forests. So we started like the selective logging in an industrial way in the 1850s about. And then we have just like changed the practices to be clear cut forestry since this last 60 to 70 years. And that, of course, has affected the forest ecosystem in Sweden in a large way. They want to protect the nature because they know that it's much more resilient towards climate change. They don't want us to do the same mistake as they did. And I think that Sweden should listen to them, and also Finland, because Sweden and Finland are part of the EU, and our governments and our forest industry and forest owner associations, they are somehow arguing against the idea of being more sustainable, which in my opinion is crazy. That's the main rule of having a civilization or a society which is working. I think it's very good that the EU dares to take these ideas and bring them up as laws and regulations, just hoping that the politicians in the European Union doesn't get too hard lobbied from this economic interest of forestry in Sweden and Finland, though.
De EU wil een einde maken aan kaalkap en wil dat 30% van de Europese natuur juridisch wordt beschermd. Maar de bosbouwlobby is sterk. En ook de Zweedse regering verzet zich met hand en tand tegen Europese inmenging. De vraag is of de Zweedse bosbouwsector, zonder druk van buitenaf, in staat is zijn leven te beteren. Het Wereld Natuurfonds, bioloog Sebastian Keerpoel en ook bosbezitter Henrik Andersson zien de oplossing in beduidend minder kaalkap en meer bosbouw waar je individuele bomen kapt, maar waar het bos in principe blijft staan. Daarbij geven ze allemaal aan: hebben papier en pulpproducten nodig, maar we kunnen die niet blijven consumeren in de mate waarin we dat nu doen.
It's also unfortunate that the whole climate discussion has had such a great impact on our forests and our discussion of forests. Now climate, which is a consumption problem, is overriding a lot of other environmental challenges we see in our forests.
And so how could you extract biomass sustainably from the forest? How would it work? What does it look like?
That needs a landscape approach. So we need to have a landscape approach. And similarly, we need to look at how can we move towards more sustainable forest management methods, clear cuts with sufficient retention. Right now, it's one-fits-all approach in forest management.
Ik vraag me af, is er nog een andere bril waardoor we naar het bos kunnen kijken? als we het bos per se willen inzetten als inkomstenbron, kan dat dan ook op een andere manier? In Tiefheden ontmoet ik Jessica Sanner. Zij runt het groene toerismebedrijf Eugernes aan de rand van het Nationale Park.
My name is Jessica Sano. I live here at Eugernes in Tiefheden National Park. We do accommodation and guided nature experiences in different ways. When we started, the land here was very cheap because it was very difficult to find a way to survive just on the land. So the tourism was very slow. It was really difficult to get guests to stay overnight because the forests around the national park was very heavily cut. They were clear cut kilometer after kilometer to get to the park, which was just like an island of old growth forest. So people, they didn't come back. After that, of course, the forests started to grow. That's the beautiful thing with trees. The first 10 years, we saw that as the trees grew and the forests grew back, then also people started to come. And it was easier and easier to get them to stay. And we worked hard together in the community to find different ways to build a destination for nature lovers, people that was potential new neighbors that potentially we would love to have as a person living next to us. So that was our goal, and it worked very well. The downside of the forest is when the trees are big enough, the companies want to cut them down again. So we started working towards the stately owned company Sveaskog, who owns a lot of the land in this part of the country and in this region. So now we have the biggest zone of continuous cover forestry in Sweden. Because of that, we can still live here and make a living.
Jessica Sanne en de gemeenschap waar zij en haar man deel van uitmaken, verdienen geld aan het bos. Niet door het te kappen, maar door het juist te laten staan. Toen ze ooit in Tiefheden kwamen wonen, was het Nationale Park een eiland van oud bos in een zee van kaalkaplandschap. Maar Jessica Sanne en haar buren hebben de gemeente en het staatsbosbouwbedrijf Sveaskog ervan kunnen overtuigen dat, om toeristen aan te trekken en een inkomen te genereren, ook het bos rondom Tiefheden overeind moet blijven. Dat kan dus ook. Geld verdienen aan bomen door ze juist niet te kappen. Ik ging op pad voor deze serie met de vraag of de Zweedse bosbouw zo duurzaam is als de regering het doet voorkomen. Nu ik allerlei soorten bos en ook allerlei soorten bosbeheer heb gezien, denk ik van niet. Er zijn wel degelijk individuele bosbezitters die het goed doen, die het beste voor hebben met hun kleine lapje bos, die de natuur en een rijk ecosysteem op waarde schatten. Maar in het totaalplaatje gaat het toch mis. Grote bedrijven krijgen hier in Zweden grote verantwoordelijkheden. Maar commerciële belangen hebben de overhand. Want wij, als consument in Europa, blijven vragen om pulp, papier en pellets.
Dit was de laatste aflevering uit het Drieluik van dossiervreter Anne-Grietje Fransen over Zweden. Volgende week spreek ik Europarlementariër Lara Wolters over maatschappelijk verantwoord ondernemen binnen Europa. Nog niet geabonneerd op Dossier Europa? Doe dat dan en mis niets.